Our connection this hour was made on November 14th, when President Trump's allegations about election fraud went to a new level. I'll quote Ben Smith of the New York Times now. Quote, that's when Rudy Giuliani, serving as the president's lawyer, suggested that one voting company, Dominion Voting Systems, had a sinister connection to vote counts in Michigan, Arizona, Georgia, and other states. Mr. Giuliani declared on Twitter that the company was a front for Smartmatic, who was really doing the computing. Look up Smartmatic and tweet me what you think, Giuliani said. End quote. The conspiracy theory snowballed from there. These two companies, Dominion and Smartmatic, had secretly teamed up with Democratic officials across the country to steal the election. Dominion voting machines were used in multiple states, and the Trump campaign alleged that Dominion hired Smartmatic to change the votes. Fox anchor Maria Bartiromo flatly declared that her sources told her that Trump won the election and was only losing because these elections machines had, quote, a backdoor to change votes, end quote. Some of the allegations included ties to George Soros and claimed that the votes were being sent to foreign countries for tabulation. But while the Trump campaign, including Giuliani, were making these wild accusations at public news conferences, campaign lawyers were rarely pushing these ideas in actual court filings, and when they did, judges were swiftly dismissing the claims, given a total lack of evidence. By the way, the truth about Dominion is that it's a company that, by all accounts, has provided excellent service in elections and has been defended by Republican officials in multiple states. The truth about Smartmatic is that it was basically not involved at all in this election. The only location that hired Smartmatic in the 2020 election was Los Angeles County, California. The founder of Smartmatic is a Venezuelan named Antonio Mojica, who created the company after watching the 2000 U.S. election meltdown in Florida. He thought he could create something better for voters and wants to take his model around the world. He didn't have many clients this time around. And yet the right-wing news outlets competed to see who could win the favor of Trump and his voters. Fox News reporters showed skepticism of the claims, while Fox anchors and commentators endorsed the claims on air. Newsmax, a newer network challenging Fox, went further, reporting the allegations were essentially factual. And OAN, the One America network, went further still, declaring that Joe Biden was not the president-elect given the election fraud. This kind of reporting was working. For the first time, Fox News was routinely losing viewers to Newsmax and OAN. But in the offices of these two companies, Smartmatic and Dominion, there was understandable anger. These weren't one-off allegations. For weeks, these networks had peddled lies about their work hundreds and hundreds of times. They worried that no one would want to hire them in the future, simply because of reputational damage. And so both companies prepared potentially massive defamation lawsuits. The lawyer for Smartmatic sent letters to Fox News, Newsmax, and OAN demanding that they immediately and forcefully clear his client's name. And if you don't think the networks are taking that seriously, just watch the clips of how they responded. They looked like scared rabbits. The networks instructed their anchors to read prepared statements claiming that no, they never said what they had been saying for weeks. Newsmax even said in an email follow-up statement that the channel, quote, has never made a claim of impropriety about Smartmatic, its ownership, or software. The company was merely providing a forum for public concerns and discussion, end quote. This is not just a conversation about a defamation suit. This is about how fair media companies go about their business trying to air the news, and some don't. And what happens if they don't? What happens when the media company becomes a propaganda arm? How far can they go to smear citizens and companies? And if Smartmatic and Dominion win their defamation suits, they could put these new right-wing networks essentially out of business. Probably not Fox, but Newsmax and OAN. So we've asked one of the wisest and most experienced voices in these kinds of cases to join us and explain what's at stake here. And my guest is Chris Thomas, a counsel with Nixon Peabody, who's back with us. Welcome back, sir. How are you?
Oh, great. I was looking around the room when you described your guest in that way. I was waiting.
No, it's you. It's you.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you want to talk about fake news. That's fake news.
No, do not. Don't do that. Your humility will only get you so far with me. And frankly, Chris, you know, we've talked for for years now about what Trump has said about relaxing libel standards. I'm going to get there a little bit later here, but let me just kind of ask you to kind of give us the backdrop. I did my best to sum up here, but I want you to start by telling me how you see what's happening and whether you see this as a potential ground shaker of a case.
Well, I think as a lot of Americans see it, you know, I don't see it through a lawyer's eyes exclusively. I see it through, you know, a believer in constitutional democracy and sort of the principles that we've been founded on by our founders, who understood the importance of a really free, robust press. And they also were well aware that the press could go too far, if there is such a thing, but that there could be instances where people would defame other people, and that in fact newspapers could say and print things about people that were not true. And you know, we've been cognizant of that probably for about a week after Peter Zenger invented the printing press. So that's not anything new. But what we've seen in the last really 4.5, 5 years is a denigration of the press and of the, you know, the quote unquote lamestream media. And when I hear the president use that term, you know, what I think is, when he's saying it is that he's talking really about journalism companies, media companies that actually have editors who are applying recognized journalistic standards to whatever it is that they're putting on their paper or putting on their website or putting on their air or, you know, anywhere else. And what we've seen in the last, you know, 5, 6 years is this sort of push to the fringes on frankly, on both sides. I think it's much more pronounced on the right. But people are migrating away from curated news that has been sort of vetted by the, you know, formerly by the likes of Walter Cronkite and Edward R. Murrow and, you know, those kinds of legends to sources that agree with whatever it is their predetermined point of view is. Like I said, mm-hmm. I think it's been a far greater push to the right, but it has definitely happened to the left as well. And what we end up with is a rush to the bottom. And, you know, I think that is, you know, a pretty good way to describe what has happened with the election. And it's been driven by, you know, just the hyper-partisan nature of, you know, of the current political scene, as well as, you know, the president with his own very direct and completely unedited and unfiltered connection to the people. And so what we've seen is the president being upset with Fox for not being sufficiently loyal, for their extremely well-regarded polling arm. And yeah. You know, I don't know if your viewers or your listeners are familiar with this, but that is the number one polling organization in the country, or one of the top polling organizations in the country. And, you know, it obviously drew the president's ire when they called Arizona before everybody else. And guess what? They got it right. Mm-hmm. And what that did was to accelerate the move by Newsmax and OAN to outflank Fox on the right. And that played perfectly with the president's narrative about the stolen election. And they were only too happy to, you know, continue to peddle those storylines without really much of any sort of editorial oversight of that.
Well, that's actually such an interesting and important point there, Chris, because I hadn't thought of the events of the last almost 2 months now in that sort of way. But that might have been one of the really big dominoes was election night call by Fox. Fox was alone in calling Arizona for Donald Trump. And then eventually in the next, I think, 24 hours, the AP joined Fox. But I remember when just the next day, Fox News had their anchors bring the head of their election desk out. and say, like, well, how could you make this call? Nobody else has made this call. And he basically said, we understand where the votes are coming from, and we understand historic trends, and Arizona is not going to flip back to Trump. They were right. And it took a while to get there for other networks. But boy, you're right. People were so angry. Fox viewers were so angry that that was like an open door for OAN and Newsmax, which were sort of fledgling, to say to Fox viewers, hey, can you believe that this network that you thought was loyal to you betrayed you? Well, come over to us. But what that led to, Chris, was like an increasing desire to prove the point by taking anything Rudy Giuliani and the legal team was saying and sort of spin it off like it was gospel. And it's one thing to say, well, I want something that confirms my biases. It's another, in the process of doing that, to smear companies. So that starts happening. If you were working inside of Dominion or Smartmatic, what starts going through your mind as you see this day after day, Chris?
Well, and it's not just, obviously, it's not just these companies that run into reputational issues, either in the media or in social media. Companies in Rochester and Monroe County confront this on a semi-regular basis where there'll be some negative press about the company, or there'll be a reporter who is calling with negative information that they're looking for commentary on. And, you know, depending on the company and depending on its size and depending on what the allegations are, we'll see. And I dealt with a well-known company that was dealing with this very issue maybe 3 weeks ago. There was panic, absolute panic. And I think that with this particular situation where you have, arguably the most powerful man in the world, also, famously litigious and famously persuasive with tweets, there must have been an absolute fire drill going on inside those companies, as well as real anger, because one thing that people don't like is other people telling lies about them. And when you have a company that you've spent years building, decades building in many instances, it can be swept away with one particularly bad set of facts or circumstances. And typically, the correction that is issued by a speaker of defamatory words is never enough to unring the bell. The bell gets rung with the first defamatory tweet. And, I always think of the president, in the following, in multiple senses, but, he's a hammer. And so everything to him looks like a nail. And as soon as, Fox called that election early, they became a nail and he was going to hammer them. That then enabled this rush to the right and rush to the bottom by OAN and Newsmax. Yeah. And I can absolutely guarantee that there was absolute terror going on in that company, followed by rage. And I think that's when their lawyers got involved. And I'll put this little disclaimer out there. I'm not involved with any of these cases or any of these companies.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
And that what you do in those situations, assuming that these are privately or publicly held companies, I don't know if they are or not, but their board of directors or executive team would be immediately hunkered down and sequestered and working on what the strategy is going to be. And for something that is as potentially damaging as the claims that the president is and his team of lawyers have been making, you go big. You can't just sit back and go, we'll let it lie. And, I would imagine within the first few hours, maybe the first 48 hours of this going on, and they recognized that it was going to continue, they started talking to their outside counsel saying, who's the most sophisticated, biggest gun that we can get on defamation issues? And let's hire him or her to, you know, start working this through. And, you know, that's where the 20-page, basically a cease and desist letter, started to take shape and then made its way to Fox, OAN, and Newsmax.
And it had an effect. I mean, if you think these networks don't care or don't think that they could stand to lose millions of dollars, first of all, Fox comes out with this sort of weird Q&A that aired. It was like 3 minutes long, and it aired on most of their opinion shows that had spent weeks hammering these claims. Jeanine Pirro, Lou Dobbs, I mean, some of the zaniest stuff. Now you had Dobbs and Pirro tossing to this three-minute Q&A in which they say, no, we see no evidence that these companies are linked. We see no evidence that these companies changed votes. We see no evidence that these companies are linked to George Soros or the devil or anything else. I mean, everything against what they've been saying. Meanwhile, Newsmax has one of their main anchors, and I kid you not, his name is John Tobacco. John Tobacco was told to read the following, and we've got the clip. Sorry. It's his name. Let's listen to John Tobacco on Newsmax.
It's election day. Various guests, attorneys, and elected officials have appeared on Newsmax and offered opinions and claims about Smartmatic and Dominion Systems, both companies that offer voting software in the U.S. And Newsmax would like to clarify its news coverage and note that it has not reported as true certain claims made about these companies. There are several facts our viewers and readers should be aware of. Newsmax has found no evidence that either Dominion or Smartmatic owns the other or has any business association with each other. We have no evidence that Dominion uses Smartmatic software or vice versa. No evidence has been offered that Dominion or Smartmatic use software or reprogrammed software that manipulated votes in the 2020 election. Smartmatic has stated that its software was only used in the 2020 election in Los Angeles, was not used in any battleground state contested by the Trump campaign. Newsmax has no evidence to the contrary. Dominion has stated the company has no ownership relationship with the Pelosi family, the Feinstein family, the Clinton family, Hugo Chavez, or the government of Venezuela. Neither Dominion nor Smartmatic has any relationship with George Soros. Smartmatic is a U.S. company and not owned by the Venezuelan government, Hugo Chavez, or any foreign official or entity. Smartmatic states that it has no operations in Venezuela. While the company did election projects in Venezuela from 2004 to 2017, it states it was never founded by Hugo Chavez, nor did it have a corrupt relationship with him or the Venezuelan government. For more on this, please go to our website at newsmax.com. Read facts about Dominion Smartmatic that you should know.
I'm sorry.
That's the closest thing.
That's
that
amazing.
Ever see. That's like a hostage video. You know, he there is no question that. You know, he was, you know, told, here's what you're going to read. And my, you know, again, I'm not involved with any of these companies or any of these cases. But, you know, just given the way things work with media companies, you know, especially these are not well established. And Newsmax and OAN are not long established, deeply rooted in journalistic ethics. You know, concepts. They're relatively new. You know, they're agenda-based stations. But I will guarantee you that there was panic going on. If they're big enough to have inside counsel, likely that inside counsel was talking to their insurance carrier, and the insurance carrier was talking right back at them, saying, You have probably just exposed a lot of our insurance money by running a whole lot of crazy stuff. And here's what you're going to start to do to try to make things right. So a statement like that, that he just read, is really exceptional. I mean, I can't think of anything even remotely like it. However, the notion of a retraction, and much more commonly, at least in publications that have aggressive journalistic standards, a correction is something that happens all the time. The simple reality is that news moves fast. Reporters are working under ridiculously tight deadlines. And these days, they're working with a lot fewer people supporting them, a lot fewer editors. So does it occasionally happen that something is incorrect, gets printed, and someone gets irate about it, even in these publications that are strongly edited? Yeah, it happens. And that's why, you know, you'll see every day or every few days in the New York Times, there are corrections, clarifications, very rarely retractions. Caliphate is an example of, a recent retraction, if you will.
That's a podcast that the New York Times was involved with that after checking, extensive follow-up, they have deemed it to be not up to their own standards. Yeah.
And so they yanked it.
Yep.
So these concepts of, correction, clarification, retraction are not new concepts. They're things that have been that newspapers and media companies have done for decades. This kind of a retraction is, well, frankly, I think it's unprecedented. And I think that it has to have been done because there's genuine concern about the loss of money.
So, Chris, I was going to ask, like, that to me, in my lay sort of analysis of that, I think that's what you do when you know you've already lost, but you're trying to mitigate the damages so you can show a jury, well, at least we did that. Like,
That is exactly right.
Ugh.
And, so the way it would get played, were a lawsuit to make it past a motion to dismiss, which is, an early dismissal of a case, or past a motion for summary judgment, which is a dismissal after all the evidence has been gleaned and a judge takes a look and says, you know what, even with all the facts having been exposed, there isn't a cause of action here. If this case gets to a jury, I guarantee that will be, these hostage videos, these retractions will play prominently in an effort to avoid what are called punitive damages. Punitive damages are damages that are awarded not to compensate somebody for a monetary loss, but to punish the wrongdoer. And to send a message to other potential wrongdoers that if you go down this path and you do this sort of thing that, Mr. or Ms. defendant has done, this is what could happen to you. You might have to pay a punishing amount of money, not a compensatory amount of money. And, those numbers can get really big or really fast.
It's setting aside the fact that it's not clear to me that these networks know that Hugo Chavez died 7 years ago and therefore doesn't own these companies. Setting all of that aside, and Hugo Chavez.
I don't know. What proof do you have of that? I think he might be in the Bermuda Triangle with Elvis. That could be happening.
Oh, man. Fair. Good point. But there's a couple of things that I think are really important to understand going forward here, because I actually feel really conflicted. As strange as this sounds, when you see an obvious propaganda network like OAN or Newsmax, it's easy, maybe, assuming that you don't buy that propaganda, it may be easy to root against them, especially if you've got family members who you feel like have started to really listen and believe this stuff and believe that there is some sort of international conspiracy and these voting machines were rigged to only swing a certain number of votes in a certain number of states, but nothing down ballot and all this weird stuff that is obviously untrue. But there's a lot of people who believe that. They believe it because Trump says it's true, and they believe it because these networks are now saying it's true or have said it's true before these videos.
Well, they believe it because they want
Yes.
I mean, and that's driven by, our individual partisanship.
Absolutely. Confirmation bias, motivated reasoning.
Yep.
Yeah. But I guess, Chris, so that stuff can be dangerous. And to your point, it can be dangerous on all sides of sort of the ideological spectrum. Right now it's manifesting, most sort of virulently where it currently resides in these lawsuits. But I'm generally opposed to the idea that a libel lawsuit should be able to take down a whole media company because, Trump himself has said for years he wants to see libel laws relaxed. He wants to be able to sue reporters he doesn't, whose coverage he doesn't like. I don't think that's healthy, and generally, I don't root for cases like this. But this one feels different because it doesn't feel like an honest journalistic effort. It feels like propaganda, which is really harmful. I wonder how you see it.
Well, I can tell you how they see it, and who cares what I think? What they think is that is exposed by the pleadings that they have submitted in court. And the arguments that they have not been willing to make in court. Why does that matter? Because lawyers are not allowed to go into court and lie to the judge. And they are not allowed to submit papers to a court or in a litigation that contain lies. Now, you can put in all sorts of really aggressive argumentation, but you cannot lie to mislead the tribunal. If you do that, you're facing serious sanctions as a lawyer, up to and including being disbarred. It happens regularly that lawyers get disbarred, and one of the reasons that lawyers do get disbarred is for misleading the tribunal, misleading the court. They have not been willing to go into court, and they have not been willing to submit papers to any of the federal courts that lay bare their arguments and that that swear under penalties of perjury that the arguments that they're making in their papers are not frivolous. And if lawyers are, again, if they're submitting claims that are frivolous, they're exposing themselves to sanctions from the court, and including disbarment. And so what you see is actions speaking louder than words, and their failure to put that, you know, these arguments onto legal pleadings that they have to sign under penalties of perjury tells you what they think about their arguments.
Well, so let me get to a couple of listener questions, and one of them is on the subject of public figures. And actually, we're going to take this first one from a listener named Mark in two parts. Mark says, I don't understand why being a public figure should make it harder to sue a newspaper. I would love to see Trump sue the New York Times right out of business. That is from Mark. We're going to get to the second half of that question first, but let me actually read from Ben Smith's coverage in the New York Times about the definition of public figure, Chris. Ben writes that lawyers said they expected that the right-wing networks, OAN and Newsmax, if sued, would argue that Smartmatic and Dominion should be considered public figures, which would require the companies to prove that its critics were malicious or wildly reckless, not just wrong. And one attorney said he would argue that Smartmatic was not a public figure, a legal status whose exact meaning varies depending on whether Mr. Mujica files suit in Florida, New York, or another state. Does it make sense to you that Smartmatic and Dominion could be considered public figures, Chris?
Well, I can tell you from a legal strategy position perspective, what you just read is exactly what lawyers are always trying to do when there are different standards of proof that could be applied to the same set of facts and circumstances. So, for instance, if you have, let's say, Mark, for instance, we don't know who he is. Let's assume he's just, you know, a guy who lives here in town and private individual. Let's say somebody, his next door neighbor, says something, who is also a private figure, says something that Mark believes is defamatory about Mark. All Mark's lawyer would have to demonstrate is that there was an utter, you know, a statement made by the neighbor that was false, a false statement of fact, and that, you know, the neighbor said it to some third person. So let's say the neighbor on the other side was also there. Three people that were there: Mark, the neighbor, and a third neighbor. And in the case of this, of a private individual speaking on something about a private concern, all Mark's lawyer would have to show is that it was negligently made. Whereas if you've got a media company and dealing with speech of a public concern, that's when the standard becomes so much more difficult. The standard becomes actual malice or reckless disregard for the truth or falsity of the statement. So that's why this really matters. And what it comes down to is an underlying principle in our Constitution and in the First Amendment, which is we want to protect. Our founders have always wanted to protect a robust media speaking on and addressing issues of public concern. You know, we've never been so concerned. We've never been so very concerned or as concerned about private speech on private matters, but we want to have, and our founders have always wanted to establish that we would have really robust conversations on issues of public concern. So that's why the lawyers are going to be jostling back and forth on this. The question is going to be, you know, another one, I think, you know, this is probably a loser of an argument, you know, whether OAN and Newsmax are actually news organizations. Mm-hmm. News organizations get that much more lenient, much tougher standard of, you know, the plaintiff has to prove constitutional malice against them. You know, I think most courts would determine that, you know, even though they are agenda-driven networks, that they are in fact news organizations entitled to, you know, the highest protection. But, you know, I think an enterprising lawyer for a plaintiff will argue that in fact they're just propaganda machines, and that in this situation that's all they were.
Interesting. Before I get Kevin and Victor on the phone, just to kind of wrap up Mark's second point, he says, I'd love to see Trump sue the New York Times right out of business. Well, so would Trump. He said several years ago he wanted to relax libel standards. And I want to ask you this, Chris. Just because he has not succeeded, does that mean that it's still not a concern that political leaders in this country are speaking more openly about being able to sue reporters whose work they don't like?
Big red flag. And, you know, it used to be that conservatives were, you know, really serious about all the amendments, and including the first. And of course, the first has multiple protections to it: religion, association, press, petition, and speech. And that all of those were sanctified, and that the, you know, the originalists out there, you know, would stand up for all of those. The fact that we've got, you know, politicians today who are openly willing to say that they want to roll that back in some way, shape, or form has got to be concerning, because it means that, you know, and not for nothing, but, you know, the Supreme Court has, you know, they haven't signaled one way or the other as to whether or not they would. But, you know, Clarence Thomas has indicated that, you know, he'd be open to hearing a case about that that would roll back. The seminal case was called Sullivan versus New York Times. And you have to be concerned about that if you think that we ought to have open and robust conversations about things, public things that our public officials are doing. You know, and that's why, frankly, you know, OAN and Newsmax will have very strong protections around them. So while Mark is angry at the New York Times, you know, his next door neighbor might be angry at OAN and at Newsmax, and this is why it is that, you know, living in a society like we live in, we are expected to, you know, endure as a public official speaking on issues of public concern criticism, and we can't be crybabies mm-hmm. about it. Yeah. Oh, I don't like what you said about me. Now, does that mean that you know, a company like Smartmatic or Dominion is going to have has the same burden that it has to meet? I think there's an argument that is going to be made. Well, it will be made that they're different than a public official. They're they're different than a public figure. But you know, there'll be a robust debate about that.
Yeah, let me get Kevin and Victor on the phone. Keep it tight, Kevin. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. I would just like to say that I don't appreciate kind of like the snarkiness that you have towards Fox and conservative media. I'm not a fan of Fox. I'm not even a fan of Trump, but I am a fan of objectivity in the media. And just to be honest, I find NPR to be the most biased media outlet there is. I mean, when I kept notes actually the last few months, there was not one negative piece on Biden up to the election. And yet there was just tons of weird out of left field stuff about Trump. You know, this black conservative is not going to vote for him.
Hey, Kevin, I'm just going to jump in here because, I mean, time's running short here. And anybody could have any opinion they want about NPR, about us, about what we do. But I want to make a couple of things clear here. If you didn't hear anything from NPR that is, quote, negative about Biden, you didn't listen very broadly. I mean, go back to the primary season. Go back to extensive coverage about busing issues, about integration, about all kinds of things. I mean, go back a year ago, there was all kinds of stuff, and there has been. To say that NPR is the most biased organization, I mean, I could not disagree more, but you certainly have the right to your opinion. And I'm not laughing at Fox News. There's a lot of good people at Fox News. I'm laughing at the fact that these organizations allow some of their news personalities, Jeanine Pirro, Maria Bartiromo, et cetera, to go on the air. And I mean, I don't know if they believe this stuff or if they're just sort of willing props, but it's absurd. Did you hear John Tobacco's mea culpa? I mean, they had to say, listen, despite what you've heard on this network for 6 weeks now, we understand that Hugo Chavez is not running things from beyond the grave and that Venezuela is not the one counting U.S. votes. You know, all of these things that you go, what happened here? I think our guest is right. It sounded like a hostage video. You couldn't believe that this has been going on here. And so, I, Kevin, I don't seek to be snarky, but like this is a very precarious little moment here. And there is an element of absurdity to it, but I'll give Chris Thomas the final 30 seconds. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I am as a litigator, I'm really interested to see if the plaintiffs, you know, or the potential plaintiffs, Dominion and Smartmatic, pull the trigger on a lawsuit. I think that it would be extremely interesting. It would cut some new ground. But my bet is that there is going to be some sort of resolution that is outside of the public eye.
Okay, well, a big case here with a lot of ramifications. And Chris, with Nixon Peabody, thank you for making the time to help us see the outlines of it. And I'll try not to bother you too much in the future.
Bother me all you want.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. I do appreciate that and appreciate all of the expertise there. Let's take a short break, and we've got much more connections coming up.